All right, welcome everyone. Buckle up because we're about to go deep, and I mean deep, into a book that's gonna, well, it might just shake things up a bit for you.
Yeah, this one's a real head trip.
It's called Are We God?
Yes.
And I can prove it. And that's not a question mark, by the way, that's the actual title.
No question mark needed, apparently.
The author is Don Durrett, and that last name's spelled Durrett.
Pronounced Durrett.
Durrett, right. So this book dives headfirst into this whole idea that, well, consciousness, like what we think of as our own individual awareness, isn't actually all that individual.
It's more like we're all plugged into this massive network of consciousness, kind of like, I don't know, the ultimate internet, but for our very being.
And it goes even further, suggesting that this interconnected consciousness is, get this, actually God. Yeah, we're talking big G, the creator, the source, the whole shebang.
So strap in, folks, because we're about to unpack some pretty wild and maybe even a little uncomfortable ideas.
Our mission today is to break down those first few chapters, really dig into what Brett, we'll try to remember that pronunciation, what he's proposing, and the evidence he lays out for this whole we are God thing. So let's kick things off with chapter one. Consciousness is not self-contained.
Right out of the gate, he challenges the way we typically think about ourselves.
Yeah.
Like, we usually assume that our thoughts, our feelings, our experiences, they're all neatly contained within our own brains.
Yeah, our own little bubble of awareness.
Exactly. But Durrett flips that on its head. He's saying consciousness isn't compartmentalized like that. It's more like a vast, interconnected web, a network that links us all.
He starts by looking at some pretty mind-bending concepts from the world of science, specifically quantum entanglement.
Oh yeah, that one always gets people scratching their heads.
It's basically this phenomenon where two tiny particles like electrons become linked in such a way that they influence each other instantly, regardless of the distance between them. It's like they could be on opposite sides of the galaxy and they're still connected, responding to each other in real time.
It blew Einstein's mind. He called it spooky action at a distance.
Spooky indeed. But here's where Durrett takes it a step further. He asks, what if this interconnectedness we see at the subatomic level? What if it's not just some random quirk of physics, but actually a sign of intelligence operating at a level we don't fully grasp?
He's implying that the communication between those entangled particles, that could be a form of intelligence itself.
Whoa.
Then he shifts gears and points to all the intelligence we see in nature, which we often just take for granted.
Yeah, like a flower knowing exactly when to bloom, a tree knowing how to grow towards the sun. The incredibly complex ecosystems that just, work.
He argues that this inherent wisdom and organization of the natural world, it points towards a guiding intelligence, a creator behind the scenes.
But he doesn't stop there. He takes that quantum entanglement idea and suggests that, okay, if those tiny particles can be connected like that, what if all matter, every single thing in the universe, possesses some level of consciousness?
Some inherent intelligence.
Exactly. And he even points out that some scientists are starting to move in this direction, suggesting that consciousness might not be solely a product of the brain.
It might be a fundamental property of the universe itself.
So, if that's true, if everything has some degree of consciousness, how might that actually play out? Durrett gives some really interesting examples. Like, he talks about those experiments where people have directed positive or negative thoughts towards plants.
And the plants actually respond, like they grow better with positive vibes and wilt with negative ones.
Yeah. And he even talks about that experiment where they hooked plants up to an electrocardiogram and they showed a reaction when another plant was harmed nearby.
Almost like they could feel it.
I mean, that's kind of freaky, right?
Definitely makes you think.
He also mentions Masaru Emoto's research with water crystals, where the idea is that human thoughts and intentions can actually affect the structure of the crystals.
Like, positive thoughts create beautiful, symmetrical crystals, while negative thoughts create distorted, ugly ones.
Whether or not you buy into that completely, it adds to this whole picture of consciousness having an actual, tangible effect on the physical world.
Which brings us to Durrett's challenge to our perception of things like, well, rocks, dirt, things we consider inanimate.
Inanimate, lifeless.
Right. He argues that even at the molecular level, everything is alive in a sense.
Like buzzing with consciousness, even if it's not something we can easily perceive.
Exactly. Which then leads him to some areas that might seem a bit, well, out there to some folks.
Like he brings up the use of crystals in holistic healing, and the idea there is that these crystals hold a certain kind of energy or consciousness that can interact with our own.
It's like they're vibrating at a certain frequency, and that frequency can influence our own energy field.
He even touches on some pretty far out stuff, like the reported abilities of yogis who are said to be able to manifest or dematerialize objects using their mind.
Like, poof, something appears or disappears.
Now, whether you believe that literally or not, he uses it as an example of how powerful consciousness can be. He's saying that the potential of consciousness goes way beyond what we typically acknowledge.
Much further than our current scientific models can explain.
But he also brings it back to some more everyday experiences that many of us have probably had.
Yeah, like have you ever just known who was calling before you looked at your phone?
Oh, all the time. Or how about when you meet someone for the first time and you just get a certain feeling about them?
Like good vibes or bad vibes, yeah.
Durrett argues that those aren't just random hunches. They're actually examples of our consciousness subtly interacting with the consciousness of other people.
And it's not just people, right? He talks about the connection between twins, especially identical twins, who often seem to feel each other's emotions even when they're miles apart.
Or how about a mother's intuition when her child is in danger?
Even something as seemingly simple as a flock of birds flying in perfect synchronization.
That's a good one. How do they do that?
He's suggesting that all these things, they hint at this underlying interconnected consciousness that operates beyond our normal senses.
It's like we're all tuned into the same radio station, but most of us aren't consciously aware of it.
Now, this is where it gets really interesting. He talks about the increasing reports of kids, especially very young kids, communicating telepathically.
Yeah, like they just know what each other are thinking without saying a word.
Jory Redd believes this is further evidence of this interconnectedness.
It makes you wonder if maybe as we get older and more developed, we actually lose some of that innate ability to tap into this shared consciousness.
It's like our sense of individuality gets in the way.
He also points out that, at least at the time he wrote the book, the scientific study of consciousness was still pretty limited.
Yeah, there were only a handful of universities really diving deep into it.
But he predicts that as we collectively evolve, the scientific community will start to pay a lot more attention to this whole area.
Because the evidence, both anecdotal and scientific, is starting to pile up.
Okay, so let's recap chapter one. If you're listening, what's the main takeaway here?
Durrett is challenging you to consider that you are not just an isolated island of consciousness. You're constantly exchanging information, energy, even emotions, with everyone and everything around you.
We're all interconnected, all part of this one big consciousness.
And this oneness, that's what he equates to God.
Which means our sense of separation, our ego, our individuality, that might actually be an illusion.
A very convincing illusion, but an illusion nonetheless.
So that's chapter one. Chapter two dives right into the big question, proof. I mean, the title of the book is Are We God? Yes, and I can prove it.
Bold statement, right.
Durrett acknowledges that proving something like this isn't exactly easy. It's not like you can measure God in a laboratory experiment.
But he does offer several different lines of evidence, experiences that he believes can point us in the right direction.
And he starts with one that's pretty hard to ignore, near-death experiences.
NDEs, yeah.
He argues that these experiences where people clinically die and then come back to life, they offer perhaps the most compelling glimpse into this interconnected consciousness that goes beyond the physical body.
Because in many of these accounts, people report being fully conscious and aware, even when their brain activity is flatlined.
He describes a typical NDE, and there are some pretty consistent themes across the thousands of stories that have been documented.
Like floating above their body, seeing the doctors working on them.
Traveling through a tunnel towards a bright light, a feeling of overwhelming peace and love.
Meeting beings of light, having life reviews where they see their past actions from a different perspective.
Receiving knowledge or insights that they didn't have before.
And then, often reluctantly, being told it's time to go back.
What's really fascinating is how these experiences completely change people. It's not just a fleeting thing. It has a profound, lasting impact on their lives.
They often lose their fear of death, become more compassionate, more focused on spiritual growth.
Durrett emphasizes that many people who have NDEs come back with this unshakable knowing that everything is connected, that we're all part of this one consciousness.
And that our individual lives have a purpose that goes way beyond our everyday concerns.
Interestingly, he points out that many NDE experiencers are actually surprised by what they learn about God and the afterlife.
It often challenges their previous beliefs, no matter what their religious background was.
It seems like those NDEs really shatter the illusion of separation.
Yeah, they see firsthand that we're not as separate as we think we are.
Durrett even recommends a YouTube channel called The Other Side NDE if you want to explore those accounts further.
Definitely worth checking out if you're intrigued.
Now, along with NDEs, he also talks about out-of-body experiences, or OBEs.
These are kind of similar in that they involve the feeling of consciousness leaving the body, but they're not usually associated with life-threatening situations.
He mentions Robert Monroe and the Monroe Institute, who have been researching OBEs since the 50s.
They've done some fascinating work in that area.
So some people have spontaneous OBEs, maybe during sleep or deep relaxation, where they feel themselves floating above their body.
It's estimated that a good chunk of the population has had at least one of those experiences.
But then there are those who learn to induce OBEs intentionally, what some people call astral projection.
That's where they consciously project their consciousness outside of their physical body.
And those folks report all sorts of amazing things, like they say there are other dimensions of reality, other realms that we can access through this out-of-body state.
And they describe their consciousness as being like a second brain, not limited by the physical body.
There's even a story in the book of someone who claims to regularly visit heaven through OBE.
Heaven, other dimensions? It's like, where does it end?
Right. He even suggests searching OBE on YouTube if you want to learn more about it. So we've got NDEs, OBEs, and then he gets into what he calls the four clairs.
The clairs, yeah.
Clairvoyance, which is clear seeing, clairaudience, clear hearing, clairsentience, clear feeling, and claircognizance, which is like clear knowing.
He lumps those together with telepathy, which is mind-to-mind communication, and telekinesis, moving objects with the mind.
All the fun stuff that mainstream science tends to dismiss as, you know, not real.
Because they can't explain it.
Durrett's argument is that these abilities, which he calls psychic abilities, they're actually just different ways of tapping into this underlying web of consciousness.
Like clairvoyance could be explained as seeing things that aren't physically present, but are accessible through this interconnected consciousness.
And telepathy could be a more direct form of communication without needing words or signals.
Then there's telekinesis, where you're literally influencing matter with your mind.
He brings up Uri Geller, the guy who's famous for bending spoons with his mind.
Who was either a brilliant illusionist or a genuine psychic, depending on who you ask.
Durrett's point is that there's enough anecdotal evidence and even some scientific research to suggest that these abilities are real and that they point towards this deeper reality of interconnected consciousness.
And that maybe, just maybe, science needs to catch up and start taking this stuff seriously.
Then he makes this connection between the four clairs, that heightened perception, and the ability to predict the future.
Precognition, yeah.
He acknowledges that there's a lot of skepticism around that, but he points to the numerous anecdotal reports of accurate psychic predictions.
And some documented cases that are pretty hard to explain away as coincidence.
He even throws in a personal story about a time when he experienced what he believes were verified psychic predictions.
So he's speaking from personal experience here.
Now, this is where it gets really trippy. He talks about the idea of multiple future timelines existing simultaneously.
There's multiple potential futures branching out from the present moment.
Which might explain why those near-term predictions tend to be more accurate.
Because those timelines haven't diverged too much yet.
He even mentions Nostradamus and his supposed ability to travel through these timelines.
And how some psychics have created maps of the future, which supposedly shows some pretty drastic changes to the continents.
Yeah, those are kind of unsettling to look at, I gotta say.
A little bit apocalyptic.
He encourages listeners to do their own research on that one.
Definitely a rabbit hole to go down if you're so inclined.
Now, Durrett circles back to make the point that our current scientific understanding is probably way more limited than we like to think.
He's basically saying that science has done a great job of explaining the material world.
But it hasn't even begun to scratch the surface when it comes to consciousness.
And that's a big blind spot.
He then moves on to another fascinating topic, channeling.
Channeling, yeah, where people supposedly receive information or messages from non-physical entities.
Durrett describes his own early experience with the Seth material channeled by Jane Roberts.
That was pretty groundbreaking stuff back in the day.
He was really impressed by the depth and originality of the information, and he felt like it couldn't have just come from Jane's own mind.
It was like she was tapping into a source of knowledge that was beyond her normal understanding.
He specifically recommends the books Seth Speaks and The Nature of Personal Reality.
Those are considered classics in the channeling world.
Now, he acknowledges that a lot of people are skeptical about channeling, just like they are about those psychic abilities we were talking about.
It's easy to dismiss it as, you know, delusion or wishful thinking.
But he points to some contemporary channelers, like Paul Selig, who channels a group of beings called the Guides.
Paul Selig's book, The Kingdom, is super direct. It just straight up says, we are God.
No mincing words there.
Durrett suggests starting with Neil Donald Walsh's Conversations with God series if you're new to channeling.
It's a little less intense, maybe a gentler introduction.
But ultimately, he encourages everyone to explore channeled material for themselves and make up their own minds.
He mentions Cryon, channeled by Lee Carroll, and Bashar, channeled by Daryl Anka.
Both of those channels have tons of information out there, a lot of it on YouTube.
He also talks about how people are often hesitant to talk about their interest in these kinds of topics.
Yeah, it's still taboo in a lot of circles.
People are afraid of being ridiculed or judged.
Or having their beliefs challenged.
Durrett believes that as we evolve, that'll change.
He's optimistic that we're becoming more open to these ideas.
He makes the point that studying channeled material, even if you're skeptical, can offer really valuable insights into the nature of the soul, the meaning of life, and the potential for human evolution.
It's like a different perspective on reality.
All right, so the last thing Durrett covers in this proof chapter is remembering past lives and reincarnation. He brings up the research of Dr. Ian Stevenson,
who spent decades documenting cases of children who seem to have very clear memories of past lives.
Like kids who could speak foreign languages they'd never been exposed to, or who had birthmarks corresponding to injuries they supposedly sustained in a past life.
Pretty compelling stuff.
Durrett argues that the combination of NDE accounts and those documented past life memories, it's hard to ignore that evidence.
It suggests that reincarnation is a real phenomenon, not just a fanciful idea.
He even recommends searching past life memory on YouTube for some examples.
It's fascinating to see some of those kids talking about their past lives.
He also mentions past life hypnotic regression, which is a technique used by some hypnotherapists,
where they use hypnosis to help people access memories from past lives.
He points to the work of Dolores Cannon, who wrote extensively about past lives and reincarnation based on her decades of experience with hypnotic regression.
Her Conversations with Nostradamus series is pretty mind-blowing.
Durrett contrasts the skepticism towards reincarnation in Western cultures with its widespread acceptance in many Eastern cultures, especially in India.
It's interesting how cultural beliefs shape our views on these things.
He then ties this whole idea of reincarnation into the concept of Earth as a school for souls.
Like, we come here to learn and evolve spiritually.
And he suggests that highly evolved beings like Jesus and Buddha, they can be seen as examples of those who have progressed further along that evolutionary path.
They're like the valedictorians of the soul school.
He proposes that the increasing availability of channeled material in our time is a sign that humanity is going through a period of rapid spiritual evolution.
It's like we're being given the tools and the knowledge we need to level up.
He believes this is necessary for our survival and for our shift towards a more unified, loving consciousness.
It's about transcending our differences and realizing our interconnectedness.
Finally, he circles back to channeling, describing it as a form of integration of consciousness,
where two consciousnesses can merge and communicate directly.
He emphasizes that Earth is a particularly challenging place to learn how to achieve this integration,
but that the rewards are immense.
He ends the chapter by saying that ultimately, spiritual knowledge is the most profound knowledge there is,
because it reveals our true nature and our place in the universe.
So that was a pretty deep dive into Don Durrett's proof for the idea that we are God.
A lot to unpack there.
Let's move on to chapter 3, where he really digs into the big questions. Who are we? Why are we here?
The existential stuff.
This is where he lays it all out, folks. He restates his central claim, we are God.
And he's not being metaphorical here. He believes this is literally true.
And he even predicts that science will eventually catch up and validate this idea sometime around 2050.
He goes back to this concept of shared consciousness as the explanation for things like maternal intuition and telepathy.
Those instant, seemingly inexplicable connections.
And then he makes this really bold statement that the feeling of separation, of being a separate individual disconnected from God and from everyone else, is a lie.
A big, fat, cosmic lie.
He's saying our consciousness is actually part of God's consciousness.
Which means, by extension, we are all inherently divine. Eternal, perfect, and divine.
That's a lot to take in.
It is. He believes this truth is about to be revealed on a mass scale, and that it will form the foundation for a whole new civilization.
A more enlightened, more compassionate civilization.
Now, as for the meaning of life, Durrett sees it as a process of expanding our awareness through experiencing all that life has to offer.
Earth is like a giant classroom, a school for the soul.
He addresses the skepticism that many people will inevitably feel, saying that truth is truth, whether we believe it or not.
And that humanity is reaching a point where we're ready to embrace these deeper truths.
He explains that as we develop spiritually, we move from a place of belief to a place of knowing,
where we experience our connection to God directly, not through faith or dogma.
And that through our many lifetimes, we gradually become more enlightened, more aware of our oneness with God.
That sense of individual self, that's just a temporary mask, he says.
Yeah, it's the ego, the limited self.
And even duality, the idea of things being separate and opposite, that's also an illusion.
He defines God as all that is.
The infinite integrated consciousness from which everything originates.
And he says that we are all expressions of that consciousness, each of us unique, but still connected to that source.
With a deep longing to remember our true nature.
He sees enlightenment as the ultimate homecoming, a return to that state of oneness.
So if we're all part of God, why are we here?
Durrett believes that we exist as a way for God to experience life.
To experience all the infinite possibilities, all the joys and sorrows, all the triumphs and tragedies.
He emphasizes that there's no judgment from God because God is experiencing all of it through us.
It's like we're all actors in this grand cosmic play, and God is the audience experiencing the full range of human emotions and experiences through us.
He then brings in the concept of free will.
We have the choice to create our own experiences, to learn and grow through those experiences.
He acknowledges that negative choices, actions that cause harm, create what he calls karma.
An energetic imbalance that needs to be rebalanced.
He makes the point that everyone, even the most seemingly saintly people, has probably made negative choices at some point in their soul's journey.
It's all part of the learning process.
Durrett describes Earth as a particularly challenging school.
Like, the souls who come here are the ones who signed up for the advanced course.
He says the challenges here come from the experience of limitation and the presence of negative energy.
Which, paradoxically, create a wider range of learning possibilities.
He offers this interesting idea that God gave us a kind of amnesia about our oneness.
Like, we forgot who we really are.
In order to create the illusion of duality, the illusion of separation.
Which has been the foundation for our experience on Earth for a long time.
But he believes that this illusion is starting to break down now.
As we collectively awaken to our interconnectedness.
He clarifies that our true origin isn't in the physical universe at all.
He describes the physical realm as an illusion created from vibrating energy.
He even mentions the idea of human body vibration frequencies.
And those stories of yogis who can allegedly dematerialize themselves by altering their vibration.
Far out.
Yeah, it challenges our whole concept of what's real and what's possible.
He reiterates that the physical plane was created by God, with our participation as co-creators, as a specific environment for experiencing the infinite and expanding our spiritual awareness.
So incarnation is like this journey of the soul leaving its true home, the spiritual realm, to embark on this grand adventure of learning and growth in the physical realm.
And he emphasizes that we are not our physical bodies.
We are spirit, pure energy, the essence of God.
The body is just a temporary vehicle, like a costume we wear for this lifetime.
Durrett explains that a lot of our suffering comes from not recognizing our true nature.
From identifying with the limited self, the ego.
He believes that as our spiritual awareness increases, our suffering will naturally decrease.
Because we'll start to see through the illusion of separation and experience our interconnectedness with everything.
It's like the more we remember who we really are, the happier and more fulfilled we'll be.
He frames life as a process of remembering, a series of aha moments where we glimpse our true nature.
And there's no ultimate goal, no finish line, just a continuous journey of becoming more conscious.
While spiritual practices can accelerate that process, he also suggests that just living life with all its ups and downs contributes to our spiritual growth.
It's all part of the curriculum.
He directly addresses the feeling of meaninglessness that many people experience, arguing that meaning isn't something we find out there in the world.
It's something we create through our experiences.
He believes that all our experiences, even the painful ones, contribute to our growth.
They all have a purpose, even if we don't understand it in the moment.
He concludes that life itself is the inherent meaning, a precious gift.
It's not about achieving some external goal. It's about the journey itself.
Finally, he challenges the Western obsession with material achievement and technological progress.
The idea that those are the only measures of success?
He argues that every culture, even those we might consider primitive, has something unique to offer in terms of spiritual growth.
It's about respecting the diversity of human experience.
He ends the chapter by restating that we are all God, experiencing life here on Earth for specific soul purposes.
And that every little bit of growth we experience contributes to the expansion of consciousness.
He reminds us that the choices we make in this lifetime have lasting effects.
And that ultimately, we're all headed towards enlightenment, whether we take the easy path or the hard path.
So there you have it, folks. That was our whirlwind tour through the first three chapters of Are We God? Yes, and I can prove it.
A lot of information to digest.
We covered a lot of ground, from the idea of interconnected consciousness and the evidence that Don Durrett presents.
NDEs, OBEs, psychic phenomena, channeling past lives.
To his perspective on who we truly are and why we're here.
It all boils down to this. We're all part of God, interconnected, divine.
So here's a final thought for you to ponder. If this is true, if we really are part of this vast divine consciousness, how does that change the way you see yourself?
Your relationships, your purpose in life, the whole shebang.
It's a big question, one that might take a lifetime to explore.
Or many lifetimes, according to Durrett.
We've mentioned some resources along the way if you want to delve deeper into these concepts.
There's a lot out there to explore.
Thanks for joining us on this deep dive. Until next time, keep questioning, keep exploring, and keep remembering who you truly are.
Peace out.